Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, February 9th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Illinois Answers Project, Showing Restraint. Champaign County Jail begins tracking and reporting use of devices. This is by Grace Hawk. Illinois Answers Project, Champaign. An Illinois Answers Project investigation into the use of restraint chairs in county jails raised questions about how Champaign County documents, tracks, and reports use of the devices. Now, the facility has updated its record-keeping practices and is submitting required reports to a state oversight unit for the first time. The development comes as part of an ongoing Illinois Answers probe that found that Illinois jails strap people to restraint chairs on average more than 1,000 times a year, often in violation of state and county policies and for longer than manufacturers recommend. The United Nations Committee Against Torture has urged U.S. officials to abolish use of the devices. To better understand how this issue is playing out in Champaign County, Illinois Answers was in frequent contact with the jail superintendent over the course of 8 months to identify and obtain the relevant records to provide insight into the use of restraint chairs in the county. The records show jail staff generally complied with best practices for restraint as laid out in state and county guidelines, but they also revealed gaps in the way the jail documented, tracked, and reported restraint chair incidents. When initially asked by Illinois Answers in 2023, the Champaign County Sheriff's Office could not say how often jail staff restrained people in chairs. The jail, which relies heavily on handwritten and paper records, didn't have any way to easily search for or track restraint chair use. It also hadn't been reporting restraint chair incidents to the state for years, despite state requirements. Nearly every other jail in the state was able to provide similar records to Illinois Answers in a shorter time period, such as weeks or a few months. Some Illinois jails use digital document storage systems that allow staff to search by keywords or particular incident types. At least one facility uses a log specifically dedicated to documenting every time staff use a restraint chair. Now, the Champaign County Jail is keeping track of restraint chair use, improving incident documentation, and submitting the required reports to the state, and the sergeant previously in charge of giving final sign-off on reports is no longer in that role. What this is fine-tuning a process that nobody has really thought about, said Jail Superintendent Carrie Voges, adding that the investigation enlightened me to a few things that we can tweak. 74 restraint chair incidents in 5 years. Records provided by the county show jail staff restrained someone in a chair at least 74 times between 2019 and 2023, typically in response to a detainee who was hitting their head against a wall or biting or cutting themselves. Officers often initially attempted less restrictive methods, such as using handcuffs, leg shackles, a belly strap, a foam safety helmet, or a gown designed to prevent suicide, before deciding to restrain someone in a chair. That's best practice, according to county policy and state standards, which say staff may only use a chair as a last resort after considering alternative methods. But not all county jails regularly attempt those less restrictive measures. Many, Illinois Answers found, restrain people in chairs immediately upon arrival at a facility, or as the initial response to someone punching or kicking a cell door. In Champaign, most of the incidents lasted 2 hours or less, in keeping with the recommendations of the chair manufacturer, Safety Restraint Chair Incorporated. This time limit was established to allow for the detainee to calm down, and if needed, it allows for the correctional staff to seek medical or psychological help for the detainee, the company website states. 18 incidents exceeded that time frame, with the longest lasting nearly 4 hours. Those durations are not uncommon, said Daniel Shaleen, president of the Illinois Correctional Association. He said he has seen incidents in which staff are unable to safely release someone within 2 hours, but are able to within four. In a handful of cases, it wasn't immediately clear how long people were restrained because staff did not document when they were released in incident reports or observation logs. That's a problem, Bogus said. I don't feel that every single report followed what I would like to see as far as documentation, she said. I still want to see, always, every report, the times in and the times out. Based on the known durations, the Champaign County Jail restrained people for lengths that are typical among Illinois jails. Illinois Answers obtained information on duration for a majority of the 5,500 incidents statewide over the 5-year period and found that people were restrained for 2 hours or less at least 1,800 times and for longer than 2 hours at least 1,300 times. Some jails, such as those in Peoria and Madison counties, strapped people to chairs for days on end, with the exception of chief breaks. One in Coles County even shocked people who were restrained using what's known as a stun cuff. In Champaign County, several people were restrained repeatedly. One man was restrained 14 times over the 5-year period. One woman was restrained 12 times in a single year. Another man was restrained 10 times in a year, and he is currently in custody at a treatment facility for people with severe mental illness. While those incidents are notable, repeated restraint happened in other jails too. In one county, jail staff restrained a man more than 40 times in a little over a year. Experts in corrections and mental health told Illinois Answers that kind of ongoing restraint may indicate staff use the chair as punishment or in lieu of treatment. Vogus said the people restrained repeatedly in Champaign County were mentally ill or had severe behavioral disorders, and they continued to try to harm themselves. Several had spent time at a state psychiatric facility or had undergone evaluations to determine if they were fit to stand trial, she said. Hour-long gaps between required checks. As in many jails statewide, staff at the Champaign County Jail did not always write down when or if they checked on restrained detainees within the mandatory intervals. The county's policy requires staff members to conduct direct face-to-face observation at least twice every 30 minutes to assess the inmate's physical well-being and behavior. Experts say it's important to keep people who are restrained under near constant observation for their own safety and to limit duration to the shortest period possible. The county's policy adds, restraint shall be checked to verify correct application and to ensure they do not compromise circulation. The Champaign County Jail was able to locate and provide handwritten observation logs for 60 of the 74 known incidents. Of course, the majority show the jail failed to document at least one regular 15-minute check. Illinois Answers identified gaps lasting up to 66 minutes.
Bogus said she believes staff made the required checks but did not write them down. It should have been done, she said. Now, I can't say that it was for sure. Logs provided by other county jails reveal staff there also failed to document checks on people within the required intervals. Some restrained people for extended periods, with no breaks to walk or use the restroom. Presented with an example of a log showing a nearly hour-long gap, Bogus was unable to decipher an officer's description of what was happening in that time frame. That right there is enough for me to say that there needs to be better explanation, she said. Bogus said that the more she read over the reports, the more she identified aspects of the documentation process to improve. Some of the observation logs don't list dates or case numbers, and when officers change shifts while someone is still restrained, there needs to be a supplemental report listing the time someone was taken out of the chair, she said. So Bogus met with her lieutenants in December and January to review documentation policies and procedures, and her operations lieutenant sent out an email alerting officers that they are required to complete those supplemental reports. Bogus said she also noticed some reports had been approved with errors. An officer who used to oversee final report approval began transitioning out of that role and training a replacement in January, she said. It doesn't hurt for us to bring in somebody new with fresh eyes, she said. Bogus, it's just an old school system. Illinois Answers initially requested records from Champaign County in 2023, and the county denied the request on the grounds that staff would have to search through 6,000 individual booking files and more than 1,000 pages of emails to identify the relevant documents and redact sensitive information. So Illinois Answers and Bogus developed a different approach in mid-2024. Bogus, who has been with the department for more than two decades and has served as jail superintendent since 2014, showed Illinois Answers the use of forced reports saved as individual PDFs in folders grouped by year on her desktop. She then spent hours scrolling through the folders to identify which incident reports involved a restraint chair and sent the relevant reports to staff in the records department more than a mile away to pull the corresponding observation logs. In the meantime, the jail was undergoing renovations and the records division was moving buildings. That meant staff had to search through thousands of pages of paper personnel files packed into hundreds of boxes. Honestly, this is one of my issues. It's just the jail does not have the ability to have easy access to a lot of things, Bogus said. A lot of smaller jails don't have a special system to manage all reports, Bogus said. The Champaign County Jail's current system from Tyler Technologies tracks some statistics, such as daily population totals and detainee demographic information, she said. But beyond that, it's hard to pull any other data on trends. Most reports are typed directly into individual PDF files, and others, such as detainee interviews, are handwritten. We're still very much paper, Excel-driven, or putting them into certain drives that we keep for years and years, she said. She said in 2023, the sheriff's office's patrol division switched to a new system for writing reports, also from Tyler Technologies, that is time-saving and more efficient. The patrol division receives the majority of public records requests, especially for records like body camera videos and arrest reports, she said. I don't think writing reports is a bad thing. It was never really thought of on the correction side as how important it might be until a situation like this, she said, referencing Illinois Answers investigation. The system the patrol division uses allows staff to digitally track trends in what kind of force officers are using and who is using force, Bogus said. But the jail's version is handwritten log that one staff member periodically types up and reprints. A handwritten list sounds a little outdated to me, but it may not be unusual if we did a poll of every county in Illinois, Chalene said. But it does seem like an old, antiquated way of keeping track of something. Jail staff recently added a column to that handwritten log for officers to check a box whenever staff restrain someone in a chair, allowing such incidents to be tracked over time. It probably just was never thought of, Bogus said. It's already been changed. It would be nice to have an electronic system for tracking use of force in the jail, too, Bogus said. In late January, she spoke with the sheriff's office's chief deputy to see if the corrections division may be able to update their current software. Is it wrong that we had a system like this? No. It's just an old school system, she said. But at some point, you have to come to the age of technology. Something needs to get done. County failed to report chair use to state. In the process of obtaining records, Illinois Answers revealed that Champaign County failed to report restraint chair incidents to the Jail and Detention Standards Unit within the Illinois Department of Corrections. Under Illinois County Jail Standards, which set minimum rules for how to run a jail and treat detainees, jails are required to report an array of incidents, such as fires, fights, escapes, and more, as extraordinary or unusual occurrences, including the use of restraint chairs. IDOC confirmed to Illinois Answers that reports are required for the use of restraint chairs. That's been the case since at least 2014. According to the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, the bipartisan legislative committee responsible for oversight of administrative rules proposed or adopted by state agencies. Bogus said she's been filling out extraordinary or unusual occurrences forms for at least the past 10 years, but she said she was unaware the reports were required for restraint chairs, so she had not submitted any. I just did status quo, what I was told, Bogus said. She's not alone. Illinois Answers found that of the more than 5,500 known restraint chair incidents in county jails between 2019 and 2023, about half were never reported to the state. During that time, state inspectors completing annual inspection reports checked a box indicating jails were properly submitting these reports, even when they were not. Spurred by questions from Illinois Answers, Bogus scheduled a meeting with the jail's assigned inspector in late 2023 to review reporting requirements, and the county has been reporting all new incidents, she said. I don't think that our use of the restraint chair in any way, shape, or form has been bad, Bogus said. I would tell every person that's in this field the importance of tracking and the importance of documenting that. Continuing with the opinion of Tom Kasich, titled, We Could Use Some of Lincoln's Optimism. Next Tuesday, the day before we mark his birthday, is the 164th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's final departure from his beloved Illinois. Traveling by way of the Great Western Railroad, the president-elect was bound for Washington, D.C., where he was to be inaugurated on March 4th. The Chicago Tribune reported the train would average 28 miles an hour through Illinois. It was not a particularly celebratory occasion. The young United States was enduring its darkest period. Seven southern states had already seceded from the Union. There was grave uncertainty about the new president and the task he faced. Lincoln also shared that concern. Leaving Springfield, he is reported to have said, I now leave, not knowing when or whether ever I may return, with a task before me greater than that which rested upon the shoulders of Washington. Without the aid of that divine being, whoever aided him, who controls mine and all our destinies, I cannot succeed. With that assistance, I cannot fail. The train made brief stops in Decatur, Bement, and Danville, all of which provided spirited demonstrations of support. Lincoln made a few extemporaneous remarks in Decatur and Danville. But it was in Tolono, a place Lincoln had visited a dozen or more times, and where he had many friends, that the president-elect allowed some of the gloom and melancholy to be lifted. He paraphrased the words of poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, a contemporary of Lincoln's, who said he had voted for the Illinoisan for president. In 1841, shortly after the death of his first wife, Longfellow wrote The Rainy Day. It includes the lines, "Be still, sad heart, and cease repining. Behind the clouds is the sun still shining. Thy fate is the common fate of all. Into each life some rain must fall. Some days must be dark and dreary." 20 years later, Lincoln alluded to the Longfellow poem in his short, more hopeful comments at Tolono. "I am leaving you on an errand of national importance, attended, as you are aware, with considerable difficulties. Let us believe, as some poet has expressed it, behind the clouds the sun is still shining. I bid you an affectionate farewell." In imagining the sun shining behind the clouds of war and chaos that he was facing, Lincoln offers some hope to Americans today, many of whom in despair about the nation's future, with a vengeful president and his sycophants threatening agencies, institutions, programs, the poor and weak, and those seeking a better life. Donald Trump is by no means a Lincoln. Rather than a president committed to preserving the Union and appealing to the better angels of our nature, as Lincoln said in his inauguration day, Trump seems committed to dividing the Union and evening the score with his perceived enemies, government workers, immigrants, transgender people, Capitol Police, the media, the world order, governments that impose mask mandates during health scares, and who knows what is next. We are not enemies, but friends, an optimistic against all the evidence, Lincoln said in his inaugural address on March 4, 1861. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. Now imagine Trump saying that. It's going to be a long 4 years, and we're going to need the help of the better angels of our nature and the courts and some courageous Republicans in Congress, and to remind ourselves that behind the clouds, the sun is still shining. Tom Kasich's column appears in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. And inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Happy 20th anniversary to the Feud and Hillbillies, one of Central Illinois' most popular bands, whose reach continues to grow. Asked for his favorite concert over the years, founder Derek Roy hinted that it has yet to come, but will be very soon. Roy, Jackie Friesland, Tad Friesland, Wes Sperry, Rod Evans, and Patrick Shepard have gigs in three states in 2025. They're in Missouri this weekend. What's their secret? Every member of the band, the production team, the spouses, all sacrifice time, efforts, and talents toward this project, said Roy, who grew up in tiny DeLand, where he was part of a 9-member high school graduating class. It takes more patience, persistence, and practice than what I feel the general public realizes. The Hillbillies started in 2005 at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana. The first song was a cover of Neon Moon by Brooks and Dunn, Roy said. What's their favorite to perform? Whichever song is getting the largest reaction that evening from the crowd. However, I would say my personal favorite is when we close with How Great Thou Art. As a secular country band, That song is so powerful to mix in and has been able to reach people in a unique way. Roy said the band's never been in a better place, both musicality and morale. Do the Hillbillies have 20 more years in them? Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise, yes, he said. And in history, area history, in 1925, though no official figures can be obtained as yet, the registration for the University of Illinois second semester is not expected to take any leaps skyward. The number registering seems to be smaller than that on the first forenoon of the opening semester. In 1975, the planned opening of a new three-year clinical medicine school on the University of Illinois campus has been delayed from next fall until 1976, the chancellor of the Chicago Medical Center said. The school was approved by the University Board of Trustees last September, but has not been approved by the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Dr. Joseph Bagondo, Medical Center Chancellor, said, "We feel we can do a better job if we just wait another year." In 2010, area residents will have more options for living in downtown Champaign in the coming months as work on six new apartments in the Hickory Building will begin soon. International history, today's highlight. On February 8, 1968, three black students were killed and 28 wounded as state troopers opened fire on student demonstrators on the campus of South Carolina State College in Orangeburg in the wake of protests over a whites-only bowling alley. The event would become known as the Orangeburg Massacre. On this date, in 1587, Mary, Queen of Scots, was beheaded at Fotheringhay Castle in England after she was implicated in a plot to murder her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I. And from Kathy Reeser's mailbag, we have a question. Several trees on Prospect Avenue near Church Street in Champaign have bright red ribbons around them. Why? My first thought was that the ribbons may have something to do with the Illinois Department of Transportation's planned reconstruction of Prospect Avenue. The stretch of Prospect between Interstate 74 and Springfield Avenue also serves as U.S. Route 150, so it is under IDOT's jurisdiction. In an urban environment, a painted red X on a tree often means it's been marked for removal, though I did not see any red paint on the trees mentioned by the reader. The fact that these are actual ribbons rather than painted markings seems to suggest that the ribbons may have been tied there by civilians rather than city or IDOT crews. IDOT engineer Kensel Garnett said, "I've confirmed with our operations, surveys, utilities, and consultant staff that these ribbons were not placed by those personnel." Most, if not all, of the trees with red ribbons are in very close proximity to the street, right at the edge, in some cases. So, are officials planning to cut down any or all trees with the red ribbons on them? Garnett did not answer that question directly. Perhaps someone who was involved in tying the ribbons around the trees could get in touch. And that's all we have time for. I'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour for the News Gazette of Sunday, February 9th, 2025. Please stay tuned.